You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And today I have another Brown with us. I have Jennifer Brown. We're not related, but we might be because we're both Southern. So welcome to a very vibrant conversation about lending, which goes in several directions. And I don't really even know how we're going to edit this thing because we were talking on top of each other. It's just so fun. I hope you enjoy this conversation. I'll see you on the other side. Are you good?
I'm doing great.
So glad to have you on the show today.
Hey, listen, I got to tell you this funny thing. I don't even know how it came about your podcast, but I found it and I said, I got to listen to this. I love your voice. I love your accent. I worked at the bank when I was in college for a lady who told me I needed to invest in some, I can't remember, was it voice
or inflection?
She said, not even a hillbilly will take you seriously later in life if you don't do something about that accent. Can you believe that?
I can totally believe it because when I lived in Manhattan, people treated me like I was 100 IQ points lower than they were, even though obviously I'm smarter. And so all that did was tell me I'm not letting my accent go. They're not having it. They've taken everything else Southern out and made it watered down. Mm-mm.
I love it. It's so true.
And I didn't want to live in Manhattan anyway. And they're probably all wishing they were like me because the last time I looked, the moving trucks leave New York full and go back empty.
Mm. No kidding. You would not believe how many New York and California license plates we see down here.
So I call them economic refugees. You are welcome to steal that phrase if you want. And somebody looked at me the other day. They said, what's that mean? I said, they're leaving high tax, bad policy places to come to a place with reasonable taxes and pretty smart policy most of the time. And we always trying to get better. So,
right. It's true.
So Jennifer, tell my audience, who is Jennifer Brown? Where are you located? How long have you been in and around the real estate space? Give them a little bit of backstory.
Wow. So this is my 26th year in the mortgage industry.
For real? Good job.
Can you believe that? Yes. Yeah, and so you can imagine, I have seen a lot in the last 26 years.
You've seen, let's see, 26 years. You were after the savings and loan crisis, but you were right there where they were rolling out the Community Reinvestment Act right after that. So you saw all that hit. And then you saw the HVCC hammer the appraisal business in 2009. And you've seen TILRESPA, which happens because the mortgage people of the world did not have a good mechanism for adjusting that policy before it got passed. I can think of several things you've seen. And available money, not available money, the meltdown of Countrywide. And remember Greentree?
I do remember Greentree. As a matter of fact, I started my career in subprime lending, if you will, doing second mortgages. I worked for a company called Migo Mortgage, and we literally funded second mortgages for contractors who were putting additions on people's homes, doing various home improvement things. So I've seen a lot of bad actors, and I've seen a lot of good actors, and I think that regulation is good when it's not completely out of hand, right? There's always a lot of unintended consequences that come with regulation.
The Paperwork Reduction Act is one of my favorite pieces of legislation of all time because it added more paper to the closing package.
Isn't it ridiculous?
Oh, but that was the consequence, right? There's paper, so let's add some more papers.
Right. There's been a lot of unintended consequences, and one of them is that it costs a lot more to get a mortgage than it used to.
Tell me about that. So what was the average amount of closing costs and fees when you got started-ish?
Oh, boy, I don't even remember. It was nowhere near what it costs right now. I mean, an appraisal back in the day probably cost you $300, $250 maybe. Now, in some places in Florida, you may have to pay $2,000 for an appraisal, depending on where you are in the state and how many appraisers there are.
So let me toss in a little number there for my listeners and viewers who are trying to figure out what's happened in the appraisal world. You should know most appraisers are still getting $250 to $300, but the appraisals are ordered from appraisal management companies who charge you, the consumer, $650, $700, $750, $800. So they're keeping a big swath of money. And my favorite is, and I don't know if you have to pay it or not, but a lot of the AMCs charge $15 per day to upload when an appraiser finishes the appraisals. I got this information yesterday in a call with DC. And it said, in North Carolina alone, there was $40 million in upload fees in the last 10 years. Just an upload fees, $15 per appraisal. So sometimes the costs go up, not because of the service being provided, but because of the bloat that got put on top of it, because you didn't have AMCs back in the day when you got started.
No, we did not. And that is the unintended consequence of the HVCC. And I will tell you that there are some good pieces for the HVCC. I have seen some really bad actors in this business. Appraisers are not excluded from that. There was a lot of stuff going on.
Every specialty has some people who don't behave well.
That's right. But instead of punishing those people, we're going to punish everyone, right? And what a lot of people don't realize is that the consumer ultimately pays for that,
yes.
Right? The banks are still going to make their money. The mortgage companies are still going to make their money. The appraisers have gotten hit hard.
Really hard.
And I'm worried about our ability to have appraisers because they make it very difficult to get licensed for very little money.
Well, it's something that's got to be addressed because the bureaucracy, the GSEs, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHFA, they would just as soon get rid of the appraisals and have everything be automated valuation models. And I don't think that's good for the consumer. Now, not that all appraisers are great, but I want an independent third-party certified appraiser to come in there and sniff it and look up and down the street. And those automated models are never going to be a full picture.
You are 100% correct. And I watched your recent episode with an appraiser and you guys touched on this. So I'm going to share something that's relevant to that conversation that you had with, was it Peter Paul?
Peter Gallo. He's been in the appraisal business over 30 years. And so he's a little bit older than you are, obviously, because men age and women stay. I mean, it just happens that way.
I like it that way. So I'm going to tell you the story, which is very relevant. So I was working with a buyer. They were a relo. They went under contract on a home for $785. We get the appraisal back, $660 is our value.
Oh,
right. So you got it. So you don't normally miss it by a mile, right? In this current market, it's not uncommon to miss it by $5,000 or $10,000 because people are going in over ask and it's competitive. And people might say, well, you know, I'd be willing to pay $10,000 over appraised value just to get the house, right? So we miss it by a mile. So we say, well, something is off, right? Something's amiss. So we go back to the agent. And we say, hey, listen, we're missing something clearly, right? Are there some comps that you can provide? Can we ask for a reconsideration of value? The biggest thing that stood out to me was the square footage that was being shown on Zillow was about 400 square feet more than our appraisal, okay? So we're missing 400 square feet. Well, we go through our exercise in futility of asking for a reconsideration of value. We ask the appraiser to go back out and remeasure. He says, I stand by my appraisal. I know how to measure a house. We said, okay. So the buyer's agent sends us the builder's appraisal that he had done at the time that he took out his construction loan. So I said, well, hey, this is a pre-construction appraisal. Can we get an independent third party to go out there and measure the house? Right? Unbiased. So I said, let's get the tax assessor out there. It's new construction. They haven't been out yet. They didn't want to do it. So I said, okay, well, I just picked up the phone and called the appraiser who did the original appraisal. And all of a sudden, all these bells start going off. He's like, I know that house. I know that builder. He said, I didn't measure that house.
So the guy who said he didn't measure it is the guy on the original builder appraisal?
That's right. He said, that is a plans and specs appraisal. He said, it's in the remarks. I'm fully covered. That was provided based on the plans and specs provided to me. I never shot measurements in that house. They never called me to go back out and do a final. I said, okay. He said, now I will be happy to go on by there for you for a trip fee and measure it. Well, guess what? It was short by 400 square feet. The builder didn't build the house to the plans and specs.
And the agent never verified that?
No, not only that, she tried to fire me, which was comical because they were my client, right? So she said, well, we can go get another lender. I said, well, they can go get another agent too, because you're not advocating for them as far as I can tell, right? Then she says, well, let's meet in the middle. I said, you want to meet in the middle? You want to meet at $75,000. So you want them to bring 20% to closing on the appraised value plus an additional $75,000. Now, these folks happen to be friends of mine. And so normally I would stay in my lane and say, you know what? You work that out with your realtor. I'm not a realtor. I don't give real estate advice. But I said, this is ridiculous. And by the way, had there not been an appraisal done on that property, if you would have gotten an appraisal waiver plus data report and some Joe Schmo went out there and took some pictures and went, yep, it's here. And they never shot the measurements. Guess who would have been holding the bag for that decrease in value?
I think it would be the buyer and the underlying lender too.
Correct. Right. And so that is why it is important to have an appraiser go out to the house and measure and do all the things that appraisers do. It's so important. And I think people are starting to really miss that. As a mortgage company owner, I own that house until that mortgage note gets bought off my warehouse line. My investors own that mortgage note until they're able to pool it and sell it to Fannie or Freddie. So there's a lot of risk that goes along with this. And we need to be careful that we're really evaluating our collateral. The episode that you did with Peter was spot on.
Well, the point you just made is when I'm sitting here processing, and this is about to become a topic at my next sales meeting, frankly, we in the real estate side, so the realtor side, I don't know that I ever hear an agent backing up what you just said, which is that the lender is taking on the risk. And we just talk about getting pre-approved and we needed this much money and this much interest rate and this much payment. And we talk about the after effects of the note over time that honestly, we're looking at the amortization piece. We're not looking at the underlying risk portion, which I think is critical because we're in a space right now, as you know, where capital is not as free as it has been in other times, especially on the commercial side where we have a cliff coming. That's a different discussion. And so when you look at why we don't have as many mortgage options as you may want to have, it goes back to the underlying risk. And what state are you in, Jennifer?
We're in Georgia.
Are realtors responsible for the square footage on a house? They're responsible for it in North Carolina. We are responsible to measure the house when we list it.
I don't think so.
But I always have a licensed appraiser to measure mine because they're way better at measuring than I am. And then I have a certified person who has measured the house before we put it on the market so that the buyer agent is going to go off of accurate information. But I was trained to pull a tape measure when I got my license. And so if Georgia doesn't have that requirement, that might be something that the Georgia Association should be looking at.
Now, we'd probably need to verify that because I'm not an agent. I've never asked. Of all the homes that I've ever sold, my agent didn't come in with a tape measure or send an appraiser out to verify square footage.
Well, I don't know, but it might not be a rule. But still, like if the buyer's agent in this scenario who was trying to snake the loan away, which is a terrible plan, I would think if I'm a buyer's agent and I've got a square footage issue, I'm going to go to the listing agent and say, hey, where's your measure? Where's your sketch? We have a discrepancy. And that listing agent has to be able to produce one.
And that's fantastic. That's the way that it should be. That didn't happen in this case at all. So, you know, this home was located and it was not in Georgia. It was in South Carolina. But obviously, they didn't measure the house before they listed it. They just were using a plans and specs appraisal.
Which happens all the time if they're near the building envelope or if something changes with the grading and the stability of the lot, changes happen.
Right. A million times when you're building a house. Yeah, it's very important.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime while also managing sky-high fuel costs at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now, and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link, www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. So if you look at that scenario, and frankly, every other scenario you've seen out there, what do you wish buyers knew to ask about the loan process, besides the fact that there are some ways that are set up to protect them they may not be aware of? What do you wish they knew about the loan process?
Gosh, I wish they knew a lot more than a lot of people are willing to tell them. That's for sure.
So they could call us the lies and the cheating and the stealing.
Right. I wish that they knew how important the collateral is when you're borrowing money. Everybody says, well, a house is worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And I say, well, yes, it is, as long as that person has the means to pay for the home. It's not worth what you're willing to pay for it if you need somebody else's money to pay for it. So when you need someone else's money to pay for it, it's worth what they think it's worth. And that's why we have appraisers go out to the home. And it's so important to do your due diligence and make sure that you are getting what you are being sold. You understand what you're buying, right? It's like people that don't get a survey when they buy a house.
What are they doing?
And we don't require it as a lender. Florida requires that you have a survey, but you can use your seller's survey if you want. Now, we bought a house in Florida, and I said, sure, I'll take your survey, but I want the surveyor to go back out there and repin the lot. I need to see with my eyes where my property is, right? Make sure that somebody hasn't come along and disobeyed a setback, or they put something on my property, right? Because that happens.
All the time. When I got my license, I got in 23 years ago, so I'm just, you know, considerably younger than you are, obviously. But our lenders used to require a survey, and it stopped at some point. And I can't remember when the requirement went away and it became a recommendation. And now it's barely a recommendation. It's like, look, if you want one, knock yourself out. When did that change? And do you know why that happened? I'm so curious.
I don't know why. It probably happened back a long time when there was the Fast and Easy. You know, I did work at Countrywide. Do you remember the Fast and Easy?
Yes, girl, because I did a couple of them here for my people.
Yeah, we called it the Fast and Sleazy. So all you needed was a 680 credit score, and we didn't verify income or assets, didn't pull tax transcripts, nothing. So it probably happened sometime around that time when everybody was fast and loose with lending. So I wish that buyers knew you need to get a survey when you're buying a house, right? You need to buy owner's title insurance. Yes, it's optional, but you need it because it protects your equity in the property. The lender's title insurance policy protects our interest in the property. We don't care about you. We care about us, right? So you've got to protect yourself. And people say, well, I don't want to pay for that. Well, there are certain things you need to pay for if you're going to buy a house.
Right.
A survey is one. Owner's title insurance.
To spend $1,200 on a new phone.
Right.
Don't give up $700 on a survey to make sure you've got clean title and that you don't have an encroachment issue with a neighbor that could wind up being a fist fight in the future because you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. And if you're going to own a home, the biggest investment probably that you will ever make in your lifetime, there are certain checks and balances that you as a responsible homeowner need to do, right? So you need a survey. You need to buy owner's title insurance. For God's sakes, get a home inspection. This is the crazy shit that's going on in real estate right now. Contracts with no due diligence, no appraisal contingency, no financing contingency, $80,000 in earnest money. When it got really crazy, we were making people sign basically a waiver, a hold harmless, saying, look, we pre-qualified you, but there are a million things that can happen before you close on that house, like losing your job, and we have no control over that. You've given them $80,000. If you get canned the day before closing, you just lost $80,000, right? When people lose $80,000, they start looking for people to blame, the agent, the lender. So this is what's crazy stuff going on right now. You're going to buy a house and not get a home inspection? It's unheard of. That's crazy.
I think it's just in that COVID era of these crazy bidding wars, like the emotion of needing to win overruled all good behavior. We're arguing with our buyers and sellers. We're like, I know that you want to waive everything, but we don't want you to waive everything because this is so important. And I think we're not even anywhere close to seeing the unintended consequences of COVID era bidding wars, because I was talking to a realtor in Austin, Texas, which everybody assumes is on fire, but their market's gone cold in a lot of areas. And he had just priced a listing like $400,000 below the comps because the people had to get rid of it. And all I can think is that's what's happening today. At some point, that consumer is going to look back and say, how did I land in this particular predicament? And like you said, they want somebody to blame. My favorite instructor of all time is Bill Gallagher here in Charlotte. And Bill always refers to it as the sue me line. He said, everybody get in the sue me line. It's going to be the agent and the broker and the lender and the underwriter and the appraiser. And all of them will be in the sue me line when the consumer gets mad. And you might get out of trouble and you might get in trouble. it all goes back to taking it seriously. And how much do we understand that this is somebody else's collateral? It is your home. It is your biggest investment. You should slow your roll just a little bit to do it the right way. So with that being said, as the markets do shift, because we're currently watching the markets, I say they're acting weird right now because it feels hot one day and cool the next. As a lender, what do you advise people on right now when the markets are all over the place? Because I know you guys are working nonstop right now, updating approval letters by the day so that somebody knows what their rate is currently. How do you help them take the big picture view of this if they wonder about the future of real estate and mortgages?
Well, I don't know what it's like in your market, but inventory is still a major issue in the metro Atlanta area. So it's still very competitive. We do update letters constantly because people are still losing constantly. But it's still, in most cases, a better investment to purchase a home than it is to rent because rents are also so high. But I do say this to people, and you hear this, you know, this is very crafty. Date the rate, marry the house. So I say to my clients, hey, that's clever, but if you can't afford to make that payment,
you
ought not buy the house because there is no guarantee that we will have a refinance opportunity in the future. Is it likely? Yes, because we know that we're being driven into a recession. We probably already are in a recession, but nobody actually wants to acknowledge it yet. When we go into a full-blown recession, there will be some opportunities to refinance, but you should never purchase something on a 30-year note under the assumption that your payment's going to go down. In most cases, your payment is going to go up. Your property taxes are going to go up. Your homeowner's insurance is going to go up. Your home is going to age. You're going to have to maintain it. You're going to have funds for a new roof and HVAC, all the things that nobody wants to think about.
That's so totally unrealistic.
Right. So it's very hard because it is an emotional decision for most people. And I'm very pragmatic about it when it's not my house. When it's my house, I get real emotional about it too. So it's easy for me to sit over here and say, well, you need to be pragmatic and this is a business decision. But the truth is that people that own homes have a higher net worth. That's a proven fact, right? So I say that there's never a bad time to buy a house. But there is a bad time to make a bad decision, which is overpaying for a house. That's when you get in trouble, to your point. They've made this emotional decision. It's all about winning. I got to win. But at what cost? You don't know what that cost is until sometime in the future. And these things that happen, you have no control over, right? The economy, you get laid off. You get divorced. I do a ton of divorce work, a ton. That's where I really focus on family law attorneys. Remember all the people that got divorced in 2009 and 10? That was bad.
It was bad.
Short sales, foreclosures. So these are all things that are outside of your control, right? So that's what I try to tell my clients when they call me is, let's make a good decision, right? I know you want the house, but it has to be under the right conditions. So getting back to your question about what do I wish people knew about the mortgage process? I think the number one thing I wish they knew was qualifying income and actual income are completely different. So actual income is income that you may be receiving that we can't use to qualify you because we don't think it's stable and consistent. Okay. Commission income needs a 2-year history. Bonus income needs a 2-year history. Alimony, child support, a 6-month history with a 36-month continuance. If you're self-employed and you don't pay taxes on it, we can't use it to qualify you.
What would be self-employed, not paying taxes on? Is that like my egg money from selling eggs from my house?
That's like when you write everything off or you're cutting hair in your garage and you get cash and all those types of things, right?
And I was waiting tables and I'm so old, we got cash tips. And when somebody was trying to buy a house, they declared every tip they made to drive their income up. But if they weren't showing any income, then the tips stayed in the pocket of the wait apron. So that's what was going on there.
That's right.
Okay.
But people assume because I am receiving the money, I can use it to qualify to purchase a home. And so when you are working with a loan officer and they're not asking you those questions, that could be trouble for you. I can't tell you how many loan officers I know that go, yep, pulled credit, looks good. I'm like, well, did you verify their income? Yeah, they told me they make $10,000 a month. Okay.
People never lie.
Right. I said, well, did you ask them how they get $10,000 a month? Because they may receive $10,000 a month, but we can only use $5,000 a month, right? I can't tell you how many times you get a client that goes online, they fill out an application to make $12,000 a month. Well, $8,000 of it's commission, and that was their commission check from the month before. They didn't tell you about the 12 months before that when they didn't make any commission, or they made $100 or $500. They say, oh, I had a great month. I make 12 grand a month.
Is this worse now in a share economy, or is it easier to track qualifying income because everything's electronic now versus when you got in?
Oh, well, it's way easier now because we have, you know, the work number where we can go and the employers have reported all the income. And it's also safer for us because we can actually verify it, and it's not a pay stub that was made up by the borrower. So I can't tell you how many times back in the day, people would go to Office Depot, they would buy W-2s, and they would make themselves a W-2.
Wait, what?
This was a thing? Yeah. And tax returns. Before we verified tax transcripts, they would just they would create their own tax returns.
Wait a minute. Okay, Jennifer. Okay, this is next level crazy. And obviously, I'm a goody two shoes who would never think of this. If somebody's making up their own W-2 and their own tax returns based on the blank forms they got, first of all, they're doing work they could have been doing in a legit way to have good qualifying income. How are you, the lender, supposed to know that's fake if it's on official forms? How would you know?
Well, now we pull tax transcripts.
We got the 4506, but did you pull a 4506 25 years ago?
No, when I was at Countrywide, we didn't verify anything. I mean, we didn't pull tax transcripts. And it wasn't until we started doing it. I mean, we literally had a borrower or wannabe borrower say, well, you caught me. We're like, mortgage fraud is a felony. I mean, nobody cares when we tried to turn the guy in and nothing ever happened.
That was legit the response?
Well, you caught me. Very flippant. Like, well, you caught me. I guess I'll go see if I can fool somebody else, because they have been used to getting away with it.
Right.
Right. And so there's a lot more blame to go around for the housing crisis than the mortgage companies, right? First of all, the ratings companies made the underwriting guidelines. They said what they would buy. So
did you know that the S&P is threatening to downgrade the MBS underlying loans right now?
No, I didn't know that.
All right. So first of all, y'all, I should let you know, if you don't understand what happened in the Great Recession, you've got to watch The Big Short. Yes, it's dramatized, but it might be the best movie adaptation of what happened with the tranches and the bad credit loans. Have you watched that, Jennifer?
I haven't, because it was too raw. I don't even want to be reminded of it, to be
honest. Brad Pitt's in it, and he's kind of cute. So it's a really good movie for those of y'all that want to get educated, and Brad Pitt's cute. So anyway, when you said the ratings agencies, because they met with the ratings agencies in that movie because they were trying to understand these tranches. So this came from my appraisal community, because, you know, I am like the mama hen for the appraisal community because I love them. The Standard & Poor's has threatened to downgrade the MBS, mortgage-backed securities. And so if you don't know what that is, watch The Big Short. Because the underlying loans have not had appraisals done.
Very interesting.
And whose fault was it there's no appraisals? You've had lenders that waived them. You've had buyers that waived them. You've had all these bidding wars. You've had the AVMs in some situations aren't counting as appraisals because they weren't done by certified appraisers. So anyway, big shit's probably going to come rolling downhill here shortly. I'm still trying to get my mind around this because that's some crazy stuff going on. But anyway, back to what we were talking about, which I've totally gotten distracted on now. You said ratings agencies and threw me off. That's your fault.
Well, it is my fault. I thought you were going to say that they were threatening to downgrade it because they've already downgraded the U.S. credit from AAA.
No, but that was a pretty wild news story that got brushed aside very quickly because the news media either doesn't think we're smart or just continually gins up other news. We don't pay attention to the big stories. But
right. And that is a big story. I think the last time that it happened was in 2011.
Yes. But what people don't know is, like, if our debt getting downgraded, the money's going to cost more now. And so if you look at the bond market, and so for those of y'all that don't invest in the bond market, here's a quick explanation. Think of a ladder. And the higher you are on the ladder is the higher your rating, but nobody gets up there. So you don't make as much interest. So as you come down the ladder, more people can get there. Your rating is lower, but you're going to have more people there. So you get more money. So the lower you are on the ladder, the more money you get for it because of the risk involved. And so interest rates will go up on our securities as a country because there's more risk involved, but risk is not necessarily our friend. It's going to get interesting, especially with August 22nd being the Durban Accords, when the BRICS nations are meeting to talk about their new currency. So I think we're in a brave new world of financials that's coming. But luckily, people like you and me, we're big nerds and we read up on it and we tell people what we know so they can make good decisions.
Right. And we've lived through it before too, right? So you get a little bit wiser when you go through it. You go, well, maybe I better save my money for the next time there's some buying opportunities out there.
Don't you wish you'd have more cash in the Great Recession? Because I always wished I'd have had a big old bucket. I didn't have a bucket, but I have one now. So whenever the markets do take a turn, I'm prepared this time. I wasn't prepared last time.
I can tell you that we were under contract to buy a lot over in Echelon, which is a Georgia Tech golf community that had $1 million plus homes in it before the crash. The bank was giving them away, like $15,000 a lot. And I wish we had bought every single one of them. We canceled our contract because we bought a foreclosure that had some squatters living in it, which is another crazy story. We couldn't close because we couldn't get the squatters out. They finally left, but it needed a lot of work. And so we said, well, we better take our chips off the table and instead of paying cash for this lot, leave those lots sold for over $300,000 when the market turned. Oh, makes me sick.
We don't look behind us. Remember, it says in Genesis, you don't look behind you, Lot. You leave in Sodom and Gomorrah. Don't look.
You don't look back because you're like, oh, man, it was tough. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Everybody said, oh, that'll never happen again. Oh, it'll never be like last time. And the truth is, it never is like last time, because just because it doesn't happen just like it happened last time doesn't mean something can't happen. The variables are different. There was no funny money. All this Bitcoin and this funny money back when we had the crash before. I mean, all these different variables. You didn't have people paying $100,000 more than a house was worth back then, right? You didn't have 2.5% interest rates, which is another unintended consequence of those low rates, because people cannot break up with their interest rate. That is why inventory is an issue.
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah. We may have to build our way out of it.
And we probably are, because we're 10 years behind on building, but that can be solved. And we should also leave you with a positive thought here, viewers and listeners, which is that I sold some houses to some Countrywide loans with people who got Countrywide loans. And even though it was fast and easy, they were still able to pay for the house and they're still in those houses. So not everybody that took out an easy loan was trying to cheat the system. Some of them just, that was the way they decided to go. And in those market conditions and in these market conditions, high inventory, low inventory, high interest rates, low interest rates, there's always somebody out there looking to buy or sell. And it's always a good time for somebody, because it depends on their situation, which after you said the date, the rate, marry the house, which is what people always are talking about, I think we should have a new phrase, Jennifer, and it should be date, the rate, marry the payment. Because if they can marry the payment, they'd be all right.
That is 100% correct. I couldn't have said it better. I'm going to steal that from you.
Well, you said it. I just consolidated it. And so we're going to make that. What's called the Brown Girls? Brown Girls said, date the rate, marry the payment. And that can be the name of this episode, team. So there's your marching orders. So if Jennifer, if there is a real estate professional, a consumer, a mortgage, anybody, just somebody needs some Jennifer Brown knowledge on Georgia and on Atlanta and on mortgages, what is the best way for somebody to find a professional like yourself?
Well, they can find me at my website, which is jenniferbbrown.com. My cell is 404-409-6875. We're actually licensed in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. So we would be happy to help any of your listeners or subscribers in those states 100%. If they just have a question and they want to bounce it off somebody, I'm happy to answer their questions. As I mentioned before, I do a lot of divorce lending. So if you have any family law attorneys out there, because that's a big one. People think, oh, I have a house, so I'm just going to be able to refinance it. And that's not always the case. And they think because they have a mortgage, they can get another one. And so it's so important to bring in a professional during your mediation process before you actually sign a court order to do something you may not be able to do.
Absolutely. Because we got back to qualifying income, back to all those scenarios, it all plays in, especially in the time of life turmoil, which is what divorce is. But I was pointing over here because there is an episode with a divorce specialist that can help you, if you're a real estate agent, become better at divorce. And then it's very wise to talk to a lending professional like Jennifer to make sure that the expert with whom you're matching up your clients knows how to speak the language. That's so important. if we're going to take care of people and make sure that they can stay put wherever they are, as long as they want to stay put. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show. I love that we went down.
Thank you for having me.
Smart things. And I'm very grateful for what you're doing out there. So keep it up. And I guess we'll be celebrating your 30th anniversary here in just a minute.
I know. I can't believe it. I'm about to be celebrating my 21st wedding anniversary next week.
Next week. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's old enough to drink.
It is old enough to have a drink. So we'll drink extra.
That's right. As long as you're not driving, who cares?
No kidding.
All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you learned something, say something nice down in the comments. Or frankly, if you just want to support the fact that we can use Southern accents and still be highly intelligent, we would appreciate if you gave us a high five. Make sure you hit the bell to subscribe and check out some of the other links here. I'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.